Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 18th of August, 2020, Tuesday class. So you'll be continuing from the Heart Sutta 2nd edition. We are at page 185. So this page 185 is based on lesson 37, we didn't complete, we are at 1.3, so we'll continue from there tonight. And as usual, let us prepare ourselves and get ready for half an hour of awareness-based meditation, so that we can develop the formal training of our mind to be aware within. The main intent is to stabilize that for those who are still not able to stabilize it. Then use it to meditate. Our mind state in the midst of life should be in the heedful state. So this training is very important for cultivator. You can't develop it in the form of meditation. You don't stand a chance when you go into the daily life, because when you are in the midst of life, your senses are fully engaged and there are a lot of things going on in life. You have to attend to many things. You have your duties, you have your responsibilities, and also a lot of unfinished business and affair to attend to as a lay person. Even as a monk, they also have a lot of things to do. Although it is thought as monk, they can devote full time to cultivation. But you really become a monk, you go through that monk's life, you will understand there are many things that you have to learn too. The cultivation involves continuity of mindfulness training. The Patimokkha itself is a very major training. You need to be mindful and heedful of all the monk's precepts, the training rules, and to develop the understanding. Then they have their daily religious routine too, every day, depending on which temple and what tradition they are. They have their set rules and routine. Then they also, at times, have a lot of temple duties. So not just lay people. But if you are a genuine cultivator, it doesn't matter whether you are a lay person or monastic, because what is more useful or important is your mind, your intent, your sincerity, your faith, your determination and perseverance. If you have that, you can be successful in either format, whether as a lay person or as a monastic, you can do well. So faith is very important. Sincerity is very important. Then you must be able to persevere, determine strongly, aspire to go this way. Okay, now we shall off the light so that we can have our half an hour of training, awareness-based meditation. As usual, the four support: relax, maintain awareness. No need to know, don't try to do anything. Silence the mind. The trying to know, the one thing to do is always by the thought. When your thought is active, you cannot be in the state of awareness or silence. So relax, maintain awareness, so that you can realize your silent mind. And 24 hours, the third support is stabilize your awareness. until it is very stable. In fact, throughout the day, initially your waking moment, you're very heedful. And later on, even in your sleeping moment, the unconscious and the subconscious moment, if you can maintain awareness, that will be good. You will learn a lot of things. You will understand many things. So all this is part and parcel of meditative training. Okay. The last support is trust. Most people don't have to go to that stage. Trust is only required when you already have the ability to stabilize your mindfulness and detect your gateway to your nature. Before that, you don't need the last support. So you just relax, maintain awareness, and stabilize your awareness for as long as you can. Use it to meditate. Okay, you can slowly mindfully come out of the meditation, then try to maintain whatever inner calmness, inner peace, and inner awareness or mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. Then the real day-to-day final meditation that will transform your understanding is actually the daily mindfulness, the daily practices. If you can be heedful in the midst of life throughout the day, like what the Buddha mentioned, if you can be ever mindful, constantly meditative throughout the day, it means you are destined for enlightenment. If you can't maintain heedfulness throughout the day, then you don't stand a chance. Dhammapada verse 21 is very clear. The heedless are as if dead. And heedlessness is the path to the deathless. Whereas if you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. Because heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. So all of meditation center on training the mind to be heedful. Then use it to meditate. Okay. Today's topic also on meditation. We will go through, then you will understand. Then let us turn to page 185. We will commence our sharing. 1.3. We will go through some Zen analogy. The first part is based on a Mahayana Zen analogy. There were two monks arguing about the temple flag waving in the wind. One of the monks said, "The flag moves." The other monk said, "No, the wind moves." They argued back and forth, but could not agree. So this is the famous Zen analogy regarding whether it's the flag that moves or the wind that moves. Because on a windy day, we can see the flag movement. So under Mahayana Zen training, they like this analogy. And they always describe this analogy and share it as a teaching. But there were not much real profound explanation behind this particular analogy. Then as time goes by, more and more people start to develop the interest, then they go into it quite deeply. So the actual understanding is very important. And my nature on my own, I came to my own understanding, which is to me very much more meaningful and profound because it's not only about this analogy. Later on, it extends to the poems of Hui Ling. And also, there is a second part to it after this initial analogy. So anyway, I will share it with you all tonight again. So when these two monks were arguing about the flag move or the wind move, there was no agreement. Then Hui Ning happened to be there. The six patriarchs said, "Gentlemen, it is not the flag that moves. It is not the wind that moves. It is your mind that moves." So the two monks were shocked, because to conventional people, lay people, it's obvious, isn't it? It's either the flag move or the monk, or the wind move, isn't it? Because these are logic, But the cultivator will understand, without the mind to interpret all this, how do you know there is a flag? How do you know there is movement? The entity that know is mind. That's why Hui Ning is very wise. He said, it is neither the wind nor the flag. It is your mind that move. If your mind does not move to arise all this, there is no word, no description, nothing. But a deeper meaning is behind all this. As we all know, from the poems that Sun Xiu wrote, then Hui Ning later on countered the poem by coming out with his much more profound poem. Sun Xiu at first wrote a famous poem regarding cultivation. He said, "Our mind." Sun Xiu was quite confused. He doesn't know what the true mind is. So he thought the mundane mind was the true mind. Then he said, "Xin Ru Pu Ti Su." So our body is like a Bohi tree. Then our mind is like a mirror bright. Understand? Then he said, we have to constantly polish this mind until it shines, so that no dust can alight. So this is the typical Theravada tradition type of cultivation, means maintain mindfulness. But Sun Xiu was trapped at mind level, trapped at the duality level. He has not penetrated the true mind. He does not realize that there is another mind which is beyond the mundane mind. So his entire cultivation was based on the sutta at the level of Theravada. So he gave a very good analogy. He said, our body is like a Bohi tree. Bohi tree symbolize tree of enlightenment. So Bohi is enlightenment. So the tree that the Buddha sat underneath and become enlightened is called the Bohi tree. So Bohi represents enlightenment. So to Sun Xiu, after understanding the teaching, the sutta, he knew our physical body and mind is very important. So he said, our body is like a Bohi tree where it can give us condition to cultivate to become enlightened. And this come about from the teaching that the Buddha mentioned. The Buddha, under one of the Dhammapada saying, is that within this phantom length body of ours, along with perception, thought and mindfulness, I proclaim the world, the cause of the arising of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path that lead to the cessation of the womb, which means he proclaimed the fundamental truth. Then Sensei also knew that the four foundation of mindfulness is the only way. The opening statement that the Buddha mentioned, Ekayano Pikawe Bhikkhu, O Bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of mind, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, leading to the enlightenment awakening, namely the four foundation of mindfulness. And this four foundation is Kaya, first foundation, Vedana, second foundation, Citta, third foundation, and Dhamma, fourth foundation. So if you look at our physical body, they are all there. The first foundation, Kaya, is our physical bodily activity and movement. So Kaya Nupasana, we need Kaya to train the mind, to anchor it, to develop the mindfulness. So the first foundation for mindfulness is Kaya. That's why within this fenderlying body, we have this physical body, which is conducive for training our mind to develop mindfulness and to stabilize it. So first category of cultivation is Kaya Nupassana, and Kaya is our first foundation. It can be found in our physical body. Then Vedana, second foundation, it can also be found in our physical body because we have the senses, the sixth sense door, upon contact, feeling arise. So that aggregate of Vedana sensation is within our own form and mind. So within this phantomine body, we have the foundation of Vedana too. Then the third foundation of Citta is the consciousness that is trapped inside, the arising and passing away of every moment of consciousness and thought process is what Citta is all about. So the third foundation is about mindfulness of Citta, the thought process, the content of consciousness. So this third foundation is also within our own phantom-length body. As I sense, he was right. Then the last foundation is about Dhamma. Because we have the consciousness, we have the form and mind, we can experience many things. We can become conscious of what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we technically feel and think. And this is how we know the world, we interact with the world. And this is how phenomena come to be. So all our Dhamma, which is true within nature, can be realized by the form and mind through its senses, through its consciousness. So the four foundation of mindfulness is within this phantom-length body. So in that sense, Sensei's poem is also very good. He said our body is like a bohi tree. But the second stanza, he got it wrong. Our mind is like a mirror bright. Understand, that is the mundane mind, that is not the true mind. So when he mentioned that polish until it shines so that no dust alight, what he is doing is he's trying to maintain mindfulness. But you cannot be in the state of mindfulness all the time. Mindfulness is important, stability of it is important. But once you establish it, you use it to meditate, to realize the truth, to awaken. Then with the wisdom, it frees your mind. You don't have to maintain that training anymore after that. After that, the understanding is already there. So you don't go and polish until it shines so that no dust can align. Because the delusion comes from dust. Who created that dust? Dust is synonymous to defilement. That's why we don't like to have dust. If our table collect dust, our furniture collect dust, we want to clean it up. Where dust is synonymous with dirty thing. So defilement, when you create it through the mundane mind, you created the duality as well, wholesome and unwholesome, right and wrong, good and bad, pure and impure. So when you create one side, automatically the opposite duality will arise. When you create defilement, whatever that is not defilement, the wholesome side appears. So duality cannot be separated because it's created from one end, which actually intertwined with the other. So mundane mind that created this duality cannot dissolve the duality on its own. That's why when you have dust, you have problem. Because since you thought, he must hold on to the wholesome state of mind. There must be no evil root or dust within, means defilement. But this mundane mind, before the wisdom arises, has this inherent delusion. And because of delusion, defilements will be there. There is the reality. Without wisdom, defilement arises. So how can you do away with defilement? You cannot. So since you fail to understand them, the mundane mind is just the way it is. Without wisdom, defilement will be there. So you need to instead focus and cultivate to develop this wisdom to understand, so that defilement ceases to be. Where with wisdom, it doesn't have power to deceive the forming mind. It does not have the power to cause sakayatiti or self-delusion to the forming mind. Then the phenomenal world of consciousness and form has got no power over the mundane mind. That's how you're free. You don't go and cultivate the opposite, means polish until it shines so that no dust and light, so that no defilement can stay in your mind. Without wisdom, you can't. That's the reason why without yoniso manasikara, wisdom at the moment of sense experience, you cannot cut a feeling. You cannot deal with defilements. Because defilements, they are there by reason of ignorance, self-delusion. Without ignorance, without self-delusion, there is no defilement. So since you didn't understand this profound teaching, he doesn't have the ability to go beyond the mundane mind to realize the true mind. So because of that, his poem is written in such a way. But this one, at the Theravada level, this poem is very good, very useful. He knows the four foundations of mindfulness. He knows the importance of this physical body and mind. But the only thing he went wrong was the duality, and he has failed to realize the true mind. He has not gone beyond. That's why he cannot realize the cessation. He cannot go beyond duality. And he doesn't know what wisdom actually is. So from this poem, when Huineng heard, he realized one very important fact, that Sensu was still not enlightened yet. He is still trapped at the mundane mind level, trapped within duality. So he countered it with a very beautiful poem. He said, Pu Ti Peng Wu Su, the first stanza, that counter Sensu's this body of ours is like a bohi tree. He said bohi is not a tree. Your bohi is basically enlightenment. How can he be a tree? Bhuti pengusu. Then Ming Jing Yi Fei Tai. He said that mere pride on a stand is not a true mind. That is the mundane mind. There is no such thing as a mere pride on a stand. That is the mundane mind. The true mind has nothing. That's why his third stanza, Ben Lai Wu Yi Wu. Originally, there was nothing. He Chu. Where can the dust alight? So from this poem, it becomes very clear that Huining has gone beyond mind. He has realized the true mind, that nature within. That's why he can counter Sun Xiu's poem. So based on that understanding, you should have inquired, why did Sun Xiu say, your mind move? When he realized that that is the mundane mind, where he has gone beyond the mundane mind, he has realized the true mind. But why did he tell this to monk, your mind move? So the first explanation was what I have explained to you. Who come to know flag and wind? How do you know? It is through the mind, the mundane mind. So if the mundane mind does not move, it does not create, there is no word, no concept, nothing. There is nothing to talk about. So what Huining wanted was to bring this two monk to the next stage of cultivation, because he is teaching them to see form Dhamma clearly. And to see form Dhamma, you need mundane mind. You need the true mind. Then when you can see the unreality of form Dhamma, then only you can see through the form Dhamma. That's why I teach you how to see form, the unreality of form, then how to see beyond form. So after form Dhamma is mind Dhamma. Because all of external form, they arise because of the mundane mind. So the mundane mind is the one that perceive and bring this external form into the mundane mind, the content of consciousness, to give rise to the five mental aggregates of form and mind, which is the thought, which is the second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind. So because of that, Huining say, your mind move, so that they pay attention to mind, which is the mundane mind first. Then they will come to understand the aggregates of mind. What can your mind do? It can perceive, it can feel, it can think, it can create emotion, mental intention, everything. This content of consciousness, whatever that the mind can do, you will learn them. You will come to understand them, because you have to go stage by stage. Form Dhamma, then only mind Dhamma. Then when you can see the unreality of form, see beyond form, you will approach the mind. Then when you look at the mind with the awareness, with the true mind, with your direct seeing, then you come to understand the mind is also the same. The mind is also dependent, originating, impermanent, causal phenomenon, condition arising. So you will come to understand the unreality of mind also. Then when you see clearly through the direct seeing, the silent mind in pure observation, then you can see beyond the mundane mind. When you see beyond the mundane mind, is the direct seeing with your nature, with your awareness nature inside. So that one can see things as they are, before the brain, the memory, the conditioning, the views, the opinion come in and interfere. before the words, before the concept, the idea. So that is how you transcend form Dhamma. You go to mind Dhamma, then you go beyond mind to the suchness sea, means the third level of perfect sea without duality, without delusion. You become normal again, suchness sea. So this is the reason why Huineng say your mind move. So this explanation is very detailed, very comprehensive. I haven't read any Mahayana book explain it this way, because people don't have that penetrative understanding. Then it doesn't end there. There is a third part that the Mahayana Sutta actually talk about it. In fact, this the late master Sun Yan Fakusan, the late abbot, he wrote one book, Forcing the Buddha Mind, with a zero in front of the cover, I remember, emptiness, Forcing Buddha Mind. In that book, he mentioned about this third part, but he didn't link it to the earlier one. Under the third part, it seems, after the passing away or parinibbana or Huineng, much later, when Mahayana's teaching flourished and become very famous, so it seems there were a lot of famous disciples, Zen master and cultivator. They were discussing this flag and the wind, and they were in the midst of very deep discussion, because it was like a seminar or whatever, a session where they developed the discussion. Then there was a lady that helped out in the kitchen and prepare food for the monks or people who attend the retreat or seminar. Then this lady is a lady. So as the monk were discussing, they came to this inquiry. Why did Huineng say your mind move? So all the monks were discussing and they were giving their various different explanation or opinion of why Huineng say your mind move. Then it seems the monk also feel very strange. Every day their meal, it seems, whatever that the monk wants to eat, the lady prepare the food that the monks want to eat. And many of the monks felt something is like happening. How come every day the food they like, they think of, the food was prepared and they had the good meal? So on the last day, when they were going to the discussion to finalize their discussion topic, the question again arise, why did Huineng say your mind move? At that moment, this lady that is already enlightened, that help out in the kitchen, she walked by and say just this sentence, where got mind? Do you know what happened? When she say that, where got mind, a lot of the monks become enlightened. That's the profoundness of the teaching. So now I give you that koan. You go back and reflect and contemplate. Then answer me and tell me whether you got it or not, whether you understand the Zen story or not. The moment she say, where got mine, a lot of the monks become enlightened. It's based on Huineng's teaching. So I will leave it at that. Huh? Then we continue with the Dhamma sharing. Cleaning the six patriarchs, say, gentlemen, is not the flag that move, is not the wind that move, is your mind that move. The two monks were stuck with awe. This is because Huining knew that these monks still have formed delusion. So, in order to prompt them and hint to them to see the next level, which is the mind, Dhamma, he has to say, your mind move. Because according to the poems, you know he has gone beyond mind. So I put in the bracket here to refer to earlier Heart Sutta notes for the detailed explanation of this Zen analogy. I have described them in the earlier sharing. That's why this sharing is very profound and very beautiful. And I don't have to remember them because my nature understands that at any one time when there's condition, I can explain to you the whole thing. And today's explanation is very beautiful because it's recorded. So listen to it and you will understand. So if you read the Mahayana book alone, you may not develop much understanding. And Mahayana teaching is such, they like to come out with all these titles, very famous titles, Zen analogy or Kongan. Because they believe if you can understand this and share this, means you have mastered the teaching. But a lot of them share using knowledge, not through understanding. That's why you share through knowledge, they are just words. They cannot awaken living being. So to share with true understanding is different. You can go and investigate and find out on your own. Then you reflect and contemplate and develop the understanding on your own. So this aspect of the cultivation is very profound, very deep, and very beautiful. You can follow and understand means chances you have your past cultivation training or this life you have done very well. Then you will have the causes and condition to awaken very fast. Because for those who can understand what I shared just now, they have the Dhamma, the awakening. Otherwise, not easy. You cannot really follow. You cannot really understand what my nature shared. So this aspect of the Zen story and the analogy is very useful. Go back and listen to it again. Then you can on your own investigate and find out. Okay, we move on. The second part is on the Bodhisattva when they are living the lay life. Then they experience death, the passing away of their sibling or their loved ones. There were many Jataka stories at the time of the Bodhisattva. Means before he became the Sammasambuddha, he was walking the Bodhisattva way, and many of his segmented life story, they call it the Jataka story of the Buddhas. There were a lot of occasions where this was mentioned, because this one leads to very profound wisdom, so that you will not attach, you will not cling. In fact, in the Dhammapada saying, there is one saying, I forgot which Dhammapada was, I think the early on, it's mentioned that from attachment, craving arises grief, sorrow and lamentation. From attachment, craving arises fear. Those that are without craving and attachment, they have neither fear nor sorrow nor lamentation. So all this are very profound Dhammapada saying. Whenever you cling, attach, grasp through self-delusion, through your craving, that condition, attachment, grasping and clinging, then suffering will arise. That's why wherever there is craving, attachment, grasping and clinging, fear arise, sorrow and lamentation arise, suffering arise. So when you understand this, then you will see the importance of developing this Dhamma understanding and awakening. The Four Noble Truths explain very clearly. First Noble Truth explain the reality of life and existence, the eight conditions. When you confront them, if you live life long enough, you will confront them all. Then when you confront them without wisdom, suffering will arise. So that suffering that arises, according to the Buddha, is due to your self-delusion, the condition, your craving. So craving, under the Second Noble Truth, is the cause of suffering. So the Buddha said, whatever suffering that you experience when you confront the First Noble Truth reality, they are conditioned by your self-delusion, Sakkayaditi. And the cause is always craving, born of self-delusion, or Sakkayaditi. So from craving, attachment, grasping, clinging arise. And because of craving, attachment, grasping, clinging, there is this grief, sorrow, lamentation, and fear. That is what mental suffering is all about. Then the third noble truth, the Buddha says, suffering need not be. When you have developed this understanding of the Dhamma, enlightenment in the here and now, cessation of dukkha is possible. And the path that leads to the cessation is the Fourth Noble Truth. You cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So what is Noble Eightfold Path? Noble Eightfold Path is based on right view, right understanding. So when you have right view in regards to the three great laws, spiritual law of nature, karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama, you will awaken. Once you are awakened, there is no more delusion, there is no more ignorance. Then you will not cling, you will not grasp. And because of that, those who don't have craving, grasping and clinging, there is neither sorrow, lamentation, grief, nor fear. So that Dhammapada saying is very, very beautiful and very appropriate. So this second analogy is based on Theravada Jataka story. I will now read it, then you will understand. The Bodhisattva's son died, but there was no crying, no sorrow, no grief, no lamentation. Why? Because the Buddha knew whatever there is of the nature to arise is also of the nature to cease. And what has been born or has already arisen has already ceased to be. So no amount of sorrow or lamentation can bring back the day. Then the other understanding that you must have is we have been born so many times. So which one of the many eons of segmented life or birth and death that we undergone is you? None. Every segment of form and mind that you take to come to this existential They are all different. It can be any of the 31 plane noises. Then which one is you? Like this line, you are born of a human condition, a human. Is this really you? Then maybe past life, you were born not so fortunate. Maybe as an animal, as a dog, as a cat, or as a fish, or as a bird. Or sometimes as non-human, can be the betas or the hell beings or even demons. Then sometimes when you have certain parami or good merits, you can be born in the heavens as devas, as brahmas. You develop your training of the mind. Then you experience different realm of existence. But which one is you? None of them are you. They are all dependent originating entity, condition arising, causal phenomena. Dependent on condition they arise, karmically conditional for you to come to this existential world. So understand all this, see all this clearly, then you understand. So when you experience death of a loved one, of a very close friend, or your own siblings, or your parents, or whatever, you have to understand the real Dhamma, profound Dhamma behind. Each and every one of us, all the form and mind, they are not a permanent unchanging entity where we can cling on to, hold on to and say, this is me, this is I. No. Because they are dependent originating, condition arising, impermanent. That's why it's not a permanent unchanging entity. It is anatta, non-self. It's not a permanent self, unchanging, no. It is evolving, dependent originating, condition arising, cause of the normal, supported by condition it arises. When conditions cease to be, it cease to be. That's what phenomena is all about. The phenomenal world of consciousness, the phenomenal world of form, they have these universal characteristics of impermanence. If you want things your way, which is not nature's way, you will lead to suffering, the universal characteristic. Then because it's impermanent, it is non-self. Empty. Anatta. Some call it sunyata. So this understanding can liberate your mind. You have to understand the conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma. Then you can live life to the fullest, beautifully. Then life becomes clear, meaningful, beautiful, and wonderful. You must understand within the conditioned world, it recognizes the relationship. There is such thing as the law of karma. There is such thing as a form in mind that is subject to karma. Even though it's not a permanent unchanging entity, not you, but it's related to you, connected to you, to your nature, through the karmic. The karmic nature, through causes and conditions, condition the form and mind to arise. And because of that, this form and mind is part of your segmented life. Because to come to this existential world, the conditioned world, you need a form and mind. You need a karmically conditioned or created form and mind for you to come. We call it the vehicle and the tool. Without this vehicle and tool, you cannot connect to your nature, you cannot understand things, you cannot develop the wisdom, the perfection. That's the reason why the form and mind is so important, so beautiful. So when you understand all this as a cultivator, then you become so beautiful. Then when you are able to have the condition to live the good and wonderful life with your loved ones, with your children, your siblings, your kilometers, your friends, your colleagues, your relatives. You can live it to the fullest. You can really have the good life. But should anything happen to them, there is no sorrow, no grief, no lamentation, no worry, no fear, nothing. Why should you? Because you know they are just form a mind, condition arising, cause of phenomena. When conditions cease to be, it cease to be, it just separate and cease. There is no such thing as death. No one born, no one died, no one sick, no one old. That form of mind is not you. It's dependent originating condition arising phenomena. Through karmic nature it arises. All the karmic conditioning behind give rise to the form of mind. So understand this deeply, profoundly, so that you have the clear understanding and the wisdom to cope with life, so that you need not suffer. Suffering need not be when this understanding is there. No matter what happened, there is the reality. Accept the reality of the moment. Resolve it amicably and move on. Do what you have to do. After all, not so real, not what you think. Moment to moment, life passes by. What are you doing? And that is the only reality, highest in life. And how stable is that present moment, that reality? Split second is day and gone. So how real can life be? See, understand all this, awaken to it. Then do not be deluded anymore. Don't grasp, don't cling, don't give meaning. The thought is very powerful. It can make you very emotional. It can really make you believe that all these are so real. As real as it can be, it's only within the moment. The next moment is day and gone. Then like the famous Dhammapada saying, my son, my wealth, my property and all those things. This only the fools lament, foolish people. For this very body also don't belong to you. Wherein son, wherein wealth, wherein property and all those things. You can't even own yourself because this is not a permanent unchanging entity. So when the breath stops, when consciousness separate, they call death. It's actually not death. No one died. It's just your form and mind identity get erased because it does not sustain its existence anymore. So when the entity erased, you cease to be. When you cease to be, how can you own them? You lose your identity. That's why they have to pass over your well, your property or whatever you believe you own to your inheritance. Then if you have a will, they will follow your will. If you don't have a will, the government has its own law. So all this is part and parcel of existence, life. You have to have the understanding through mindfulness. Through the silent mind, in pure awareness, to observe, to understand, and to awaken, you can develop the wisdom to live life to the fullest, to experience all of the pristine wonders and beauties of life. And this is possible. That's why this era, we call it the Sasana, the golden era, the window of great opportunity. You can really live life, develop the understanding of life, and live life to the fullest. We can get to experience so much wonderful things, beautiful things, and we can go through so much transformation evolution of consciousness that are so beautiful, which our forefather failed to have the condition to experience or live them. And we are really indeed very fortunate, very blessed. That's why our last Sunday topic was very good. Cherish everything. Then appreciate our good blessing. So all this can give rise to a lot of joy, a lot of happiness, a lot of understanding. But all this need wisdom, clarity of mind, Dhamma, understanding. Okay, so with this, I will go on to read that part. Then we can maybe finish off with the two sand analogy. Oh, part two I have read. Okay, then no need, I just summarize. The Bodhisattva's son died. Actually, the story was actually more profound. I think it involved one of the son that the Bodhisattva was with on one outing. So the son was actually trying to prepare fire. Then there was this smoke that arose. Then nearby there was a cave. The son didn't know. Inside the cave there was a big snake, a serpent. I think the smoke disturbed the serpent and the serpent came out and actually attacked the son and killed the son. Then when the Bodhisattva came to know, there was no sorrow, no lamentation, nothing. He just do what he has to do. Then he saw a lady pass by. He asked that lady, who is also from the same village, to tell the wife, today don't bring food for three, bring food for two. But bring along some perfume and white cloth or clothing. When that lady passed the message to the wife straight away knew one of the children has passed away. And the wife also, without sorrow, lamentation, without sadness, he just bring the thing. Then when they arrive, they together with the husband prepare the pyres, P-Y-R-S, to cremate the son, to burn the son. So they put perfume. They dress up the son. Then while they were preparing all this, the king happened to be nearby hunting. Then the king saw. Then the king wanted to find out what happened. He came near and talked to the Bodhisattva's wife. He said, who is it that you are trying to cremate? She said, oh, sorry, he approached the Bodhisattva first. Then the Bodhisattva said, my son, he just passed away. Then the king was very surprised. He said, it must be a very naughty son. No, he said, he is full of philopiety. He is a very good and understanding child. Then the king was so curious. He asked the Bodhisattva, if that is so, then how come you are so calm? You don't even have any sadness, sorrow, or lamentation. You didn't even cry or grieve. How can it be the case? So the Bodhisattva spoke that stanza just now. He said, O King, whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. So what that has arisen or born into this world has already come to pass. So no amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the day. So why should I grieve? Why should I lament? Cry? No meaning, is it? So that is the profoundness of the Bodhisattva's understanding. So the king thought, maybe this guy has the understanding and wisdom But the mother sure have attachment because they give birth to the child. Then he approached the wife. He asked the wife the same question. Aren't you sad? Aren't you sorrowful? Aren't you afflicted? The wife repeated exactly like what the husband said. No amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. So the wife also said, why should we grieve? We just do what we have to do. So that is the profoundness of the Bodhisattva and the wife understanding of life, even at that time when they were still Bodhisattva. Of course, they are cultivator of the way. They are Bodhisattva that walk the path of the Bodhisattva way or Bodhisattva path. That's why they are great beings, Bodhisattva. They have this profound wisdom and understanding. They never lament, they never grieve. So no need to lament, grieve, or become sorrowful. Because these are form and mind, dependent originating condition arising. They arise because of causes and condition, affinity. Then when there is condition to be together, we should appreciate every moment of it. Then when conditions is to be something else according to karma must happen, then let it be. No amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. So why should you grieve? Why should you lament? So these are very beautiful understanding and wisdom. That's why the Dhamma is so profound, so beautiful, so meaningful. So this one, you really can learn a lot from it. Okay, we move on to the third part. The third part is more about our retreat temple, Sampo Temple in Cameron Highland. Our Cameron Highland retreat, Sampo Temple, stillness and breeze, that is the heading. So this one is to teach us how to develop Dhamma contemplation. Stillness, breeze, and Dhamma contemplation. When your mind is silent, peaceful, and still, all of nature's phenomena, mental and physical phenomena, can be perceived clearly. You must try it when you are at the retreat. When you have trained your mind, when you have developed the ability to be silent, to be aware, relax, go for a walk, then find a nice place, contemplate, silent everything. You will understand what I share here, and it's very beautiful. Dhamma contemplation is second turning wisdom. It's meditation itself. When your mind is silent, still, and peaceful, and calm, all of nature's phenomena, mental and physical phenomena, can be perceived clearly because they keep on arising via mental perception and consciousness within your silent awareness nature or true mind. When at the retreat, you are very relaxed, at ease, and heedful most of the time. So Dhamma contemplation can arise easily. Your nature is creative. That's why it can reflect, it can contemplate, and it can arise the understanding. So Dhamma contemplation can arise easily, and there is Dhamma in everything. Dhamma is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. And there is Dhamma everywhere in everything that comes within the field of your perception and awareness. So when you silence your mind, that silent awareness can pick up a lot of things. The phenomenal world of consciousness, the phenomenal that move, evolve, arise and pass away within the neumonal nature. They are very beautiful. They are like dancing clouds. of phenomena within that nature. So beautiful. Yeah. Then you're silent, your senses are fully activated, and within that silence, you can hear, you can smell, you can taste, you can tactile feel, and your nature can feel. That's why a lot of things can happen. You can feel the great vibration of nature, the great energy within nature, the weather, the breeze, the whatever wind or breeze that is passing by, the vibration within nature. There are so much of this vibration, especially near the temple place. We have the forest, the stream nearby, the insect sound, the animal sound, the vibration of nature. They are so clear and so pristine, so beautiful every moment, every instant. When you meditate, you can be aware, you can experience them. And the nature is really ever ready to receive them. It's like they are one within your oneness nature. And existence is so beautiful, so wonderful. So all this can lead to great awakening, Dhamma contemplative wisdom. So this part, when you are at the retreat, when you have the condition, go through it, develop it, understand it, then awaken to it. Then you will transform. Okay, we finished the first part. Now is part two. Meditation reporting. Reporting on meditation. So 2.1. There is a question. The title is, meditation is not just about becoming calm and peaceful. So a lot of people fail to understand. They think to develop the good meditation is to have the calm, the peacefulness of mind. The very soothing calmness, the one that is not agitated, the mind that is quiet, tranquil, and still. But that is not the purpose of meditation. It will come as a byproduct, but the purpose of meditation is to develop the ability to awaken to insight in the phenomenon, to awaken to the universal characteristics of nature, to understand how we function as a human and how our mind, mundane mind, get entangled with phenomena, how due to lack of understanding, self-delusion, ignorance, sakkayaditti, wrong views, we stir our mind. We react to sense experience, creating all the defilements, creating all the mental hindrance that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion that condition us into heedlessness, suffering, misery. So all this is the real purpose of meditation. So now I will read on. And I will go through with you so that you understand. The question asked was, when I focus on an object to meditate, I can feel there is a grasping. Thus I change to free flow and I find it more relaxing, and there is better blood circulation with better awareness. So this was the question. So of course, if you focus on an object, you build up stress, understand? You try to focus your mind and fix it there. It takes up a lot of energy and stress. That's why he used the word, I can feel that there is this grasping, clinging to do it, to develop the focusing. It's not relaxed. Then he said, thus I changed to free flow, means relaxed and at ease. And he find it more relaxing, and there is better blood circulation with better awareness. So I answer him, I said, meditation is not just about developing calmness or having good and bad meditative experience, but it is about developing wisdom via the silent mind in awareness to insight into the three universal characteristics of nature, anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Meditation or bhavana consists of two parts, samadhi and panya. First part is samadhi, which is the power factor of samasati and samasamadhi. That is training the mind to be in sati or aware first, or mindfulness, leading to the samadhi or collectedness and unwavering mind to arise the heedfulness needed for cultivating insight. Then the second part is to use this trained mind in sati and samadhi to meditate, to cultivate the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha, leading to heedfulness to develop the wisdom or panya. So how can we do that? Can you do that by focusing on an object of meditation? Or must you just train your mind to be aware via a skillful means or a meditation object? The latter will lead you to an understanding of what you are doing in the name of meditation. So whatever happens in meditation, as long as you are silent and aware to understand what is going on, then wisdom can arise. If we have expectation that meditation must lead to calmness and good meditative experience, then we have a problem when it doesn't happen. Most yogi tend to react and chase after good meditation and what they do is they become unhappy and agitated when they cannot get what they want or expect. Hence the mind is not at peace with the moment, especially when they fail to develop the calmness or the very good meditative experience, means they fail to experience piti, sukhang, and the calm state of mind. And hence their mind is not at peace with the moment. This lack of understanding is the main problem that trap most yogi. So they tend to develop the attachment, craving, and the clinging to all this good mind state. So every time they meditate, they crave to have those good meditation. The problem with the mind is the moment you have craving, it cannot settle down. Your craving is a desire, and desire is part of the sensual desire, and it is a mental hindrance. So how can you develop the meditative mind? Mental hindrance are mind state that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you cannot meditate. So just let things be. Don't have any expectation or don't crave or look for things. Just relax, maintain awareness, and let the silent mind develop the understanding. I read on. You must understand that the moment you are silent, this is very important. The moment you are silent means you are without thought. You are already aware and heedful. So you don't have to try to be aware. This is where most meditators didn't get it right. They fail to understand this. They have this conditioned mind that is based on logic. And whatever that is logical to the mundane mind is most of the time not the truth. Things that are logical to you may not be the reality and the truth. Because the reality and the truth is always the opposite of logic. Because logic, if you are not careful, you can be trapped. So this aspect of logic is you fail to understand what mindfulness is. So when they ask you to meditate, you always have this mind or this thought telling you, I must be heedful. I must develop mindfulness. So how do you do it? You try to be mindful. And the worst is some try to practice to be mindful. They know, they verbalize, they do all sorts of funny things. Not understanding that you have to be completely quiet, silent, and still without thought for mindfulness to arise. Well, mindfulness is the awareness nature within. It's your true mind before the arising of thought, before the stirring, before your reaction of mind state, before the aggregates arise. So all this understanding is very important. If you fail to understand, you will do the logical thing, which is the foolish thing, the wrong thing, which is the opposite of what truth is. So I read on, you will understand. The trying is always by the thought. Always remember that. And if your thought is active, how can your mind be silent and aware? Do you understand? It's just like when you are lost in thought or thinking. You are preoccupied with what your thought is doing. So when you are preoccupied with the thinking process, how can you be aware of what is happening within the moment? You can't. It's just like in a lecture. Instead of paying attention, listening attentively with the silent mind, be attentive. Don't comment, don't verbalize, don't compare. Then you can listen and assimilate what has been shared or spoken. But if you use your views, opinion, and conditioning to react to what you hear, then when you are doing all this mental movement within, you are creating your own thought process. And you are preoccupied with that mental activity. So when you are in that state, how can you be aware? That's why you cannot be attentive. Sometimes you miss out important sharing or expression or explanation by the lecturer or the teacher or the guide or whatever. Yeah. So attentiveness without thought is awareness. To be attentive without thought is awareness. You can listen, the art of listening. But the moment you are not silent, you are not attentive, you are lost in thought. And when you are lost in thought, you preoccupy what you are thinking, you cannot be aware, you cannot be within the moment. So this understanding is very important. The trying is always by the thought. If your thought is active, how can your mind be silent and aware? Then how can you be aware of what is going on in life? The five mental hindrances that hinders your mind from becoming peaceful and calm will arise as long as your mind is deluded and heedless, they lost in thought. This habitual tendency or heedless thinking is the main problem. So to counter these five mental hindrances, we need to cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculty of Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. We are cultivating the following. This is how you train your mind. So to develop the spiritual faculty, you have to cultivate devotional practices or do your puja to develop the faith, the Sadha, Virya, and the Sati. Pay respect mindfully. When you go through the puja, devotional training or practices, you develop faith, you contemplate and reflect, you chant the salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, you understand what constitutes the Triple Gem and why you take refuge and what the refuge means. Then you also pay respect or salutation to the Buddha to develop the faith, Sadha, and Virya. Then you try to understand how wonderful this teaching is. That's why when you chant the salutation to the Dhamma, there is a lot of joy. Because this teaching can bring about enlightenment, freedom from suffering, misery. So all this will drive you to cultivate Sadha leading to Virya. Then you will develop Sati, bow mindfully, chant mindfully, recite mindfully, everything do with mindfulness. Even when you go and make puja offering, be mindful, be aware, then rejoice, be aware, cultivate heedfulness, mindfulness. So all this will help you. Then the second way is the meditative, the mind stream method combined with metta to decondition the heedless thinking. We are just feel and relax, no more thinking. So this, what they call skillful means, mind sweeping metta combined with metta is very useful. Especially for those whose spiritual faculty are still not developed and not stable. Then after that, you cultivate anapanasati or mindfulness of the in and out breathing or breath. To stabilize the sati, born of the above training, means the mind stream method and metta, leading to the silent mind in sati, means followed by samadhi and panya. Means this silent mind in sati, you need to stabilize it until the mind enters sati. And when the mind enters sati, it becomes ever mindful, it has samadhi, then it can see things as they are and awaken. That's how wisdom come to be. There was a question raised by a yogi during last Saturday meditation class as to why the random thought keep on arising during her meditation. I told her, this is good because at least now you are able to be aware or mindful of your own lack of peace and understand why your random thought keep arising. Why this thought and not other thought? When you are aware of all this without any reaction of mind and agitation or trying to do something, then what happened? You will come to realize that all these random thoughts arise due to your attachment or clinging to a lot of those mind activity that affects you during your daily life. And this arising thought has a lot to do with your memories, which you have deposited or accumulated into your brain. You can call them scars or memories, your unfinished business, the thing that you still hold on to or give meaning into your brain over the years. And since thoughts are response to memory, that is how random thought arises during your cultivation or your meditation. And you just let it be and remain just silent in a way, then this random thought will start to slow down on their own until there is just stillness and awareness or quietness. Also, if you do not cling and live your life with heedfulness and wisdom, then all this clinging and grasping and accumulation will cease to be, and you will be very peaceful most of the time. That's the reason why you need wisdom. And to develop wisdom, you need to be heedful. So heedfulness leading to wisdom, they come together as a pair. Without this, you will cling. Without wisdom, you will cling. You will be deluded, deceived through your wrong view, your wrong thought, Sakkaya Ditthi, self-delusion. So all this understanding is very beautiful. That's why we need to train our mind to be heedful, to be aware, then to see clearly, to awaken, to insight into phenomena, to develop the wisdom. Once there is wisdom, then the clinging and the grasping and the accumulation, they will all start to be less and less and finally cease. And when you no longer cling, grasp and accumulate, well, everything is just the way it is. You can be at peace with them. You can have the joy, the clarity, the understanding. Then you are always at peace. There is no more reaction of mind, stirring of mind, the mental hindrance, no more. So that is the most beautiful transformed state. And this can only happen with wisdom, through right view, to be at peace with the moment, with the reality, with what is. Like what the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. It can't be otherwise. So that is what the reality is, truth is. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions existing. Because of such causes and conditions, the phenomena become like that. The world become what the world is. People are just the way they are. So learn to see things as they are. Learn to accept the reality of the moment. Condition like that, things will be like that. It can't be otherwise. We are, all this follow nature's law. And nature's law is the only reality that governs life and existence. Not your views, your opinion, your version of truth. This does not bind the phenomenal. The only thing that binds the phenomenal are nature's truth, nature's law, that understand all of its condition. So when nature's conditions are already there, manifested, things will move and unfold according to those conditions and reality. That's why things is just the way it is, like the Buddha said. Learn to see things as they are. Learn to be at peace with what is, with the reality within the moment. Every moment, it is so pristine, so beautiful. Can you experience the moment? When you are within the moment without thought, that is very pristine. That is the most beautiful state. Without thought, there is only tranquility, stillness, and awareness. There is no fear, no anxiety, no sorrow, no lamentation, no negativity of mind state. The mind is just tranquil, still, aware, with a lot of calmness, clarity, joy, understanding, leading to all the joy and happiness. So this is what the enlightened being's mind states are. They are all the time peaceful, calm, tranquil, with the understanding and joy. Their nature is so beautiful. That's why life is beautiful, meaningful. So this is the beauty of the Dhamma. When you really cultivate, the result can be really, really amazing and very beautiful. You can experience them in the here and the now before you pass away, before your form and mind separate. Then when you have the understanding and the realization, my nature rejoices, and you will be the most beautiful living being, most happy living being, able to realize all this. So have faith, then strive on with heedfulness. All these are possible because of the sasana, because of the condition that we have developed. So our website, our sharing, Kayamita Shape, all this can help and transform Kayanamita. Then from the Kayanamita, it can help change the world, transform society. Then later on, even the planet consciousness, they can also evolve and become better. Okay, we will read on. We is the three universal characteristics of nature, and Vipassana is to insight into. Hence, Vipassana is a meditation that leads to the ability of the mind to insight into the three universal characteristics of nature, to arise the wisdom needed to liberate the mind. So meditation is about insight and not about good and bad meditation. Reaction of mind is due to one's wrong view that conditions the arising of wrong thought, leading to all the fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, restlessness of mind. Understand via awareness how this wrong thought comes to be and how they condition our fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, etc. via thought projection and proliferation is very important. So thought projection and thought proliferation, these are the two that create heedless thinking, create fear, worry, anxiety, restlessness of mind. Then understand how Dhamma can allow us to develop the wisdom needed to free our mind, leading to the peace and tranquility within. This is meditation. So hopefully with all this, you can have the clear understanding and develop the meditation appropriately. Okay, good. We finish. So we end. So at least we completed lesson 37.
Then there are also many other suggestions that came in, which we implemented. The short video is one of them. And my nature rejoices, many are helping out. And when you help out to do the short video, you develop a lot of beautiful understanding on your own. Then also it helps you develop the parami, because the service you provide to bring about condition for all this sharing to be possible is very wholesome, very beautiful. Then when you listen, you learn. Then it makes you very diligent, very diligent. Then you tend to have the interest. Then you keep on listening, listening. So Avijja Sutta, step 2, constantly listening to the true Dhamma. That one will take off. As Kayamita, step 1 we all have. Dhamma friends, we have a lot. And even Dhamma friends who has the Dhamma now, we are starting to have more and more. So these are good signs. Then step 2 will take off. Step 2, constantly listening to the true Dhamma is very beautiful. And step 3 is a natural state, a natural consequence of the step 2. With step 2, you will develop the step 3, faith in the Buddha and his teaching, faith in the Triple Gem. Then after that, step 4 is most beautiful. Step 4 is what you need, the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara. When you constantly listen to the Dhamma, first turning, second turning, and third turning wisdom, they will arise. Then as you cultivate, develop the cultivation to puja everything, you also develop the first, second, and third turning wisdom, contemplative wisdom, especially second turning, that prepare you to receive truth. Then after that, as you straighten your view with the initial wisdom, step 5 will arise. Sati sampajana means mindfulness and clear comprehension. Sati sampajana is very important. Step 5. So when you have this stability of mindfulness to go into this cultivation of the daily mindfulness with clear comprehension, you will develop a lot of clear understanding, ability to insight into phenomena and awaken. Step 4 help you to develop step 5. Well, without step 4, the initial wisdom, your mind react and stir a lot, creating mental hindrance. That's why you cannot have the daily mindfulness stabilized. You must have step 4 very stable. Yonisomanasikara. Then only step 5 arise. When step 5 arise, you are home. You are destined for enlightenment. Your step 5 means you already have the initial wisdom. You are ever mindful, constantly meditating, cultivating the third turning most of the time. Of course, also the contemplative second turning. And because of that, you will have this step 6 and 7. Step 6 is sense restraint. Because your mindfulness is so stable, your understanding of the Dhamma is so stable, so different. That's why you can have the ability to become transformed. Means sense restraint in the sense that your precept is automatic. You cannot break them anymore. Your sense restraint is automatic because of the wisdom, the mindfulness, the sensitivity and the clarity of mind. So sense restraint will lead to step 7. Step 7 is the three way of right conduct. When you have sense restraint, you can cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Especially after you have the first path factor developed, then you can arise the four right effort to cultivate the second, third, fourth and fifth path factor, which is right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action and right livelihood and the four right effort. So this Noble Eightfold Path factors, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood and the four right effort, they are collectively together. When you develop that, means you are cultivating the first two advice of the Buddha. Avoid all evil, do good, cultivate wholesomeness. Then when it comes to Samasati and Samasamadhi, the last two path factor is about wisdom, is about meditative bhavana, the third turning. That one is very powerful. So Noble Eightfold Path, when they fall into place, you are destined for enlightenment, you will awaken. So when you start to cultivate the three type of right conduct, means right thought, right speech, right action, then you are at least an Arya, first stage of sainthood or second stage of sainthood, Sakadagami or Sotapannasi. Then after that only you move on to step 8. Step 8 is the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness, sati, patthana practices. So sati patthana practices is step 8. When you go through it, like the final summary of the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said the moment you finish the cultivation, you will realize at least anagamanship. Otherwise, you will straight away become Arahant. If the minor concede no more, then straight away you can become an Arahant. Then, when you cultivate step 8, step 9 will arise. Step 9 is the 7 factors of enlightenment. They keep on arising because when you move into the Satipatthana practices, if you do it correctly, the enlightenment factor that can make you enlightened, they keep on arising. Then you have them all, the 7 factors of enlightenment. Then when you see that, you know you are on the right path, you are destined for enlightenment. Then finally, step 10, the enlightenment in the here and the now, the realization of Nibbana will happen. That's how the 10th step of the Avijja Sutta the enlightenment sequence comes to be fulfilled. And it's so easy, really, really easy, not difficult. So do not doubt, just have faith, strive on with heedfulness, maintain the perseverance, be sincere, cultivate with faith. Faith, sincerity and perseverance will bring forth away. Okay, so this is useful sharing.